Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome back to the Reasonable Doubt Podcast. My name is Rob Rosen. I'm the executive producer and creator of Reasonable Doubt.
And I'm Fatima Silva, criminal defense attorney and co-host of Reasonable Doubt.
And my name is Detective Chris Anderson. I'm a retired homicide investigator and the co-host of Reasonable Doubt.
All right, first we start with a plug. 20 seconds into this thing. Tuesday nights, 10 o'clock on Investigation Discovery. Please, please check out Reasonable Doubt if you haven't already. This is a true crime show like no other. This week, we're going to talk about the Ronnie Denny case, which was a really interesting case. But before we get to that, I have to ask my friends and the hosts of the show, how was your week in lockdown? How are you doing, Chris? You got your hat on backwards. You got a little more facial hair going. What's up?
Yeah.
Chris, are you insecure about this hair growing out?
No, I'm
not
insecure.
Because you did an IG live, too, with your hat on.
Yeah. No, I'm not insecure at all. I just know I look like crap right now. So I am.
You look so handsome.
Well,
let me see the hair.
Fatima.
I'll
send you your dollar for the compliment. But
take off the hat.
No, we are not taking off.
I'm also wearing a hat.
It is a monstrosity that's happening here. It's so bad.
Wait, this is funny because you two show up all insecure wearing hats for this, like, you know, virtual podcasting, and I showed up with a towel on my head from getting out of the shower. That's how much you should not care.
Is it really insecurity, or is it just us being honest with ourselves? We look bad, so we're trying to get the badness.
Reasonable Doubt is all about hard truths.
That's right. And we are being honest with ourselves right now.
So
between 1 to 10, how sick of this are you? I'm at an 8. I think today in particular, I'm really, I'm over it.
You're irritated with isolation?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm at an 8. How about you?
I mean, imagine if you had a wife and kid, though.
I'd be at a 9.
You would definitely be over it. Like, you're by yourself. That's awesome. But then again, I don't know. It might get kind of lonely if I can't be alone that long. We all know I need to.
Well, that's why I FaceTimed you like 3 nights ago just so we could chat.
No, Chris, where are you at? I FaceTimed you, which is ironic.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm glad you did. Chris, 1 to 10, where are you at?
1 to 10, I would say I was at a 5.5. Because, you know, it's just me and my wife. You know, my son is here, you know, but it's really just us two. She goes to work. I have my little play area. If we're both here at home, she's upstairs, I'm downstairs. We'll meet somewhere in the middle to eat dinner and eat lunch. And then we go back to our separate spaces. So, yeah, I mean, this is.
I hate you so much right now,
this
Chris.
Is the life,
in your upstairs, downstairs.
What's your number?
Let's talk about my situation.
Yeah, what is your number?
Well, my number actually depends on the time of the day, because I kind of go through these phases throughout the day. evening when you know my husband's done working and we can enjoy and like breathe as a family, I don't have to constantly tell the baby, shh, shh, daddy's on the phone. Then it's like, oh, it's family hour. You know, we can relax, play music, have a good time. So I'm fine then. I actually appreciate those moments. It's nice family bonding. But it's during the day when he's on all these conference calls and I'm trying to get work done and the baby's just running around like crazy because we are in an apartment in San Francisco and we don't have an upstairs downstairs like Chris. We can't just say, hey babe, you go in that room. I'll see you in a few hours. Nope. We are like stepping on top of each other. So do
you get up to a 9 or what are we talking about?
There are moments, honestly, when I'm one of those when I go to bed at night. And I always pray before I go to bed because I'm like, okay, God, I'm gonna give it up to you. I'm gonna relax. But then there I am like midnight, eyes wide open. Like what's going to happen with the world? What's going to happen in a year? And we've talked about this. I start to get this anxiety. It's the Virgo in me. And I'm at like a 10 at that moment. I feel like I got to run outside.
Yeah, it's like, claustrophobic.
Maybe not streak, but like I just need to run free and like.
Doesn't it feel like the walls are closing in? It's like a claustrophobic feeling.
It does. Really it does. I start to kind of like breathe heavily.
Look at Chris. Chris can relate to none of this.
I mean, you know, I don't have the anxieties. I mean, you know, Anitra has those same anxieties. She does. But yeah, I just don't have them. I just kind of, you know, I plan out my day. And if it doesn't go the way I plan it, I'm going to make sure I get something done. As long as I get something done every single day, I'm fine. Just anything. It could be, you know, changing out the light fixtures around my pond. You know, hey, I you know, that's cool. As long as I got something done.
I need to think more like that.
You know, what's weird is that the only part of this whole COVID scare that doesn't make me anxious is I have no anxiety about getting it. That doesn't bother me at all. I just don't like what's happened to the world.
That's strange.
I have no fear of getting it. Well, I mean, I'm just not in a age group or I don't have any pre-existing conditions. So I just don't, you know, look, eventually.
I mean, but it's still brutal, I hear, even if
well, eventually you're not we're gonna, at risk. Well, 70% of people are asymptomatic. That was a good rebuttal. Read the Boston Globe today. There was a whole thing where ultimately, no matter how we do this, we're going to have to get herd immunity. There's no way. We're all going to have to get it. So I'd rather get it now than later. Let's just get it over with.
And there you have it, folks.
There it is.
All right, let's get to the Ronnie Denny case.
Yeah, this case, guys, I got to be honest. I feel like this could have been a 10-episode series in and of itself. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I watched the episode. I'm like, wow, okay, there's a lot that we just couldn't include. So people
intense.
Need to listen to this podcast.
Yeah. And anytime you've got a missing person murder, I find it so compelling. It's the second one we've done on Reasonable Doubt because there's always that lingering doubt, at least from a layman's perspective, like, could this person even still be alive and still be out there? Here's a little bit of background info on the case.
New Cordell, Oklahoma. January 27th, 2007. 8 a.m. 27-year-old Melissa Flores calls her sister-in-law after a night out. She tells her she's coming to pick up her kids. She never makes it. Melissa isn't seen or heard from again. Her body has never been found. Melissa leaves behind one clue. Her car is parked in the driveway of her ex-boyfriend, a man named Ronnie Denny. Police search his house, find nothing, and the case goes cold. 2014, a friend of Denny's approaches police and he's ready to talk. Weeks later, Denny, who's now married and has started a new life in Texas, is arrested.
2015, Ronnie Denny goes on trial. Murder cases without a body are very difficult to win. So prosecutors first have to convince the jury that Flores is actually dead and that Ronnie killed her. They prevail and Ronnie is convicted. He is now serving a life sentence with no chance of parole.
So it's kind of interesting to me that, like, I think up until the turn of the 20th century, you couldn't even prosecute someone for murder when there was a bodiless case.
Right.
As a investigator, Chris, how hard is it to try to investigate a missing person's case where you suspect that the missing person is actually a murder victim?
you know, it's extremely hard. As a matter of fact, I have a 20-plus year old. This case is almost going on 30 years old now. Nobody case. The victim has never been found. And you know, the main reason that it's so hard to prosecute is the first thing you have to establish in a murder investigation, or the first thing that you should establish in a murder investigation, is that the person has been murdered. And it's extremely hard for you to establish that if you don't have a body. So they are very, very hard. And I think, you know, because of the advances in technology and science, and the science behind investigations, that has improved or made more district attorneys and more detectives feel more comfortable in prosecuting these cases. But still, that question always lingers. Is this person really deceased?
So, Fatima, as this case went on, it became really clear that Ronnie Denny, and he admitted it himself, was a hellraiser. He was a drug dealer. He had a bunch of weapons inside the house. I mean, he even admits he was not a good guy. If you're on the defense side, how hard is that to overcome with a jury?
It's really hard. I mean, you want to approach it and you know, get it out before the prosecution can, that's for sure. And you always try to distinguish, you know, what if the crime is different than the crime that's, you know, being charged now. You want to try to just get it out there and distinguish the difference, right? And you hope that there's nothing similar to what the charge is now. Because if those, you know, those prior bad acts come in, it automatically, you know, creates motive, bias, all of these things, a habit. And so it can be very damaging, and it makes you nervous when you have to defend someone like that. And in this case, I mean, just to name a few of Ronnie's history, it was, you know, larceny, possession of drug paraphernalia, like you said, stolen weapons. And what's the number one thing we're going to look for in a case like this, right? Is there a history of aggravated assault or battery? Yeah, there was. So when you have those things, you know, already a part of somebody's past, you can't say this person's not capable of this. There's no way they could have done this. No one's seen this person in anger. No one's seen this person, you know, physically harm this other person. But you couldn't use that in this case. As a matter of fact, you know, there was a lot about his violent tendencies and even violence towards Melissa. And we didn't bring that up much in the episode, but she had many times ran away to her family's house, her brother and her sister-in-law's, because she wanted to get away from him. He had threatened her. He had choked her out. A different situation. So it was a really rocky relationship, and he definitely was violent towards her.
So one of the things that I'm really obsessed with this case is Chris's interview with Shannon Long. And it just so happened that the night before Melissa went missing, she and Shannon went out. Chris, you don't like coincidences. So when you go into that interview and you know that, is that starting to ring alarm bells for you?
Absolutely. You know, I looked at Shannon almost like, you know, because there were several things that could lead back to her that pointed towards her in this case. Do I think that she was responsible? Did she clear up everything? No, she really didn't clear up everything. But, you know, there were certain circumstances that pointed at her, like the blood in the sheets, like the fact that they really didn't get along or didn't care for each other. But they go out the night that she supposedly had been murdered.
Your roommate testified to seeing bloody sheets and bloody handprints in your bedroom. Was she making that up?
No, it was my blood. After Melissa left, me and my friend went in my bedroom and we had sex, and my nose ring had got ripped out. You know, people are gonna think what they wanna think, and I understand the way things look. I get it. I didn't do anything to Melissa, and there's not a day that goes by that I don't think about her. She doesn't deserve to be forgotten.
Would I have wanted the sheets? Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the most disturbing part, is that they just don't go to get the sheets. I mean,
well, I think they did try to get the sheets, but when they went over, she told them that she had washed those sheets, or she had
right. I guess what's disturbing is you're aware, everybody's telling you, you know, she was with this girl the night before. This girl is, you know, basically the other woman, and police don't automatically go to her home first thing, you know, before she could get rid of the sheets. they could have somehow seen that, you know, if we have a missing person. It just seemed like in this case, there was a lot of lagging going on. I don't think it was taken as serious as it should have from the start. And so there were opportunities missed when it comes to the search.
And you know, sometimes that happens with these nobody cases.
Yeah.
So, you know, it,
right.
I mean, because it starts out as a missing persons cases. They have an entirely different sheet of music that they operate off of than homicide investigators.
And I get that. It's disturbing because you have a mother. And yeah, we're not talking about her. She's missing. Her car's missing. You know, possibly she ran away. You know, her car was there. Her items were there. I mean, a woman's purse and phone are the most important things that she's going to have with her, especially if she's got kids and she's not with her kids, right? Because right, you want access to your children. You want to be able, somebody to get a hold of you if something happens with your kids. So that right there, I felt like, personally, the investigation should have gone a lot farther than it did. It was very slow in the beginning, and it allowed time for things to happen, and such as disposing of the sheets. But, you know, I mean, there was testimony of the guy she was with that night, as well as the roommate's boyfriend. The roommate who said, you know, she saw the bloody sheets, that boyfriend testified, one, that they woke him up to move his car because he had to let some girl whose car was parked in front of his out. And it just so happened that girl was Melissa. And he said, I saw her drive away. I had to move my car so she could get out. So, you know, according to those four people, she left the house at 5 a.m. Right. Another thing is, you know, the guy she was with that night verified, yeah, we were having crazy sex. She hit her head against the wall and her, you know, nose started bleeding. That's wild. Okay. You know, is it possible? It's possible. And like Chris said, she could have lied about it altogether. Mm-hmm. And I think another thing that stuck with me that I don't know if you and Shannon mentioned it in the interview, but she at about, she goes somewhere that morning at about 8 o'clock, drives past Ronnie's house and sees that Melissa's car is there. And her and Melissa had kind of bonded the night before over Ronnie's a jerk. He's played us both, you know, let's do our thing. And, you know, Ronnie was pissed about that. He was obviously texting Melissa. And so Shannon texts Melissa, and there was a text, and it said, I guess you went back to him. Good luck. So, you know, that was pretty interesting. She saw the car parked there, unless that was fake, you know, could have all been part of this great plan. But if not, it goes to show that, you know, she was surprised to see Melissa's car back at Ronnie's house.
Some hell of a planning.
So, you know, thinking like Chris Anderson and putting on my Chris Anderson hat, the other woman goes out with the victim the night before, coincidence one. The other woman has bloody sheets, coincidence two. The other woman gets rid of those sheets before the police can come, coincidence three. And the other woman just happens to leave the house at 8 o'clock and is driving past the spot where the victims disappeared from and then places that text, right?
And so remains by Ronnie's side throughout all this.
So you could see how the loved ones start spinning and thinking that maybe there's something else going on here. I mean, I think more than in most cases, I did understand why enough weird stuff had happened that it was making them have a hard time processing what happened in this case.
Absolutely. I mean, look, y'all know me. I hate coincidences. They don't fit right.
Let's move this along. Fatima, you interviewed Melissa's husband at the time. She was separated, but not yet legally divorced from Kevin McIlvaney, who was the father of two of her children. She had a third child with Ronnie Denny. And I really thought in a lot of ways he was the heart of this investigation. I want to play a little bit of a clip from that interview.
So what would you say to his family that maintain he's innocent?
He lied to you. It was an accident. He come out and it's like, man, I did this. It was an accident. I can deal with that. But the lies and the deceit, it's unforgivable. I hate him. I thought many a times, man, I should just go kill him, get it over with. He took my wife, and then he took my kid's life when he killed her. He didn't destroy my life. He destroyed our whole family's life. I couldn't go to a gas station, a grocery store, anywhere without my kids seeing a missing poster of their mother. You know, man, I'm sure we should come home. Yeah, me too, baby. I'm out here having to live life and clean up the mess that he's made.
Yeah, let's just clarify now. Yes, he had an alibi. The husband had an alibi for that night, and you know, they had looked into him and quickly dismissed him as a suspect. But in case that crossed anyone's mind, because he would be naturally a person of interest.
He would be a person that we looked at.
I mean, in our conversation, the way he described himself as a husband, when he said bad husband, I remember thinking, oh, tell me more. You know, this is.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Are we talking physical? But it sounded like as we continued the conversation, he was very young. They had two boys and he just was kind of doing his thing with his friends. And like you said, playing video games and didn't really cherish her like he should have. You know, he painted this picture of Ronnie, which a lot of it we already knew that he is this person that a lot of people fear. But it was key to hear what kind of mother Melissa was. And that's important because once again, we're dealing with a missing person. So you always have to think about, you know, did this person run away? Did this person, was she in a physically abusive relationship? And she felt like the only way I'm going to get out of this alive is if I completely disappear. Those are things you have to consider here. But when it comes down to it, the way that she's described as a mother, the kind of mother she was, even all of his meth head friends gave statements at trial saying, you know, when we were all at the house, we were always in the back room doing drugs and Melissa was never a part of it. She was always in the front room with the kids. She barely ever came back there. A lot of them didn't really interact with her much because, you know, they would say she was very different than Ronnie. I don't really know what she was doing with Ronnie. She never did drugs. And her kids were her priority. And the fact that morning she calls her sister-in-law to say, I'm coming to get the kids. You know, I just, that right there just let us know, look, this isn't a woman who would on her own volition just get up and go.
And that's really the one thing that everybody that we talked to, even Ronnie Denny himself agreed with, that she would never have abandoned the kids. Now, moving to the prison interview that Chris did with Ronnie Denny, Chris, you were on fire in that interview. I want to play a couple of clips. You know, to me, it seemed like Ronnie Denny was doing an okay job explaining things until we got to what happened that morning. And you drill down on him, and I just think his story kind of started to crumble.
How many times did you call Melissa that night?
7, 8, 9, 10 times.
What happens next?
Probably midnight to 1. I went to sleep. Next morning, I'll wake up and I'd looked outside and I seen Melissa's car out front.
What time was that?
probably between 9 and 10 somewhere. I look around and she's not there. So I go out to the car and I look in there. And I see she's, or I think her purse was still in there. The phone that I let her use was still in there.
Did you not get worried?
Yeah, at that time, I wasn't worried. What I was really thinking.
You weren't worried?
Not at that time. At that time right there?
Yeah.
At that time, I was thinking that her and Shannon were gone riding around. I think she just parked
without her purse, without her phone. She'd had the phone the entire night before. She received all these phone calls from you, and she decides, you know what? I'm going to leave my purse, my phone in the car, and I'm going to go ride out with Shannon.
Yeah, I didn't know what she was really thinking.
Melissa called her sister-in-law at 8 o'clock that morning and said that she was at your house.
Well, she wasn't at my house. I mean, her car.
How do you know? You were asleep, right?
Well, she, yeah.
Huh?
You know, I hate to say that I got a little pissed, but I got a little pissed. You know, you think about everything that you've heard about this mother, this woman, and you think of how she was about her children.
Am I overreading it that you caught him in a lie? Because when you said, why did Melissa call her sister-in-law at 8 a.m. and say she was in your driveway? Well, she wasn't. Well, how would you know that? You were asleep. He had said that he was sleeping till 9.
And that was that was where I was about to go next. But yeah, you know, it was so much that happened with Ronnie. It did get a little bit heated across that table. And, you know, as I'm looking into his eyes, I noticed that he stops doing some of the things that he normally did when we talked about his background and talked about his history and talked about how his relationship with Shannon. You know, he made very good eye contact with me. I could tell that he was engaged he was engaged in that conversation. But when his story started falling apart, that's when he lost his engagement with me.
Another part of the prison interview with Chris and Ronnie that I thought really stood out was Chris, when you really pressed him to explain, if he's innocent, why on earth did he move her car? Here's how it went.
So what did you do next?
At some point, the cops were sitting down at the corner by my house, and her car was in my driveway. And I was a drug dealer. And the only thing I could think of was like, man, I don't know why they're still here, but I'm gonna put it out in the highway and get rid of it. Maybe they'll leave me alone.
So your reasoning behind moving her car out of your yard was to avoid police? They were already surrounding your house.
Yeah, it's to make room in the driveway because I was drug dealing, but obviously I wasn't on a drug deal with cops in front of the house and behind the house.
That doesn't make sense, Ronnie. That doesn't make sense at all.
It's petty. That's what it is. It's petty.
As an investigator, that doesn't register with me.
Right.
It doesn't. That looks like you are trying to get rid of evidence.
Well, I wasn't trying to get rid of no evidence. You know, everything that would have been evidence was still right there in the road, and they see it.
You've got to admit, your actions that day were very, to say the least, peculiar.
But it doesn't mean I did it. That's one thing. I am innocent.
So, Chris, when you're one-on-one with a convict like that, when you're in a sort of an interrogation setting and you sense that someone's being less than truthful, I mean, is that generally the method you start drilling down on the logic and the details of their story to see if it falls apart?
Absolutely. You want to make sure you get hammered in on those details. And usually if it was a real interrogation, you know, it would be a lot more detailed than it was during that conversation with Ronnie. You know, and I think by the time that he told me that he was just trying to push the car out into the road because he had drugs, he was a drug dealer, I think that was just complete so, you know.
We're not here to represent these defendants. We're here on behalf of the family. And sometimes people think we get too tough. I don't know. Sometimes people think we're too soft, but, you know, we're doing what we feel we need to do to get to the truth.
And I think that this family, by the way, I think it was hard for them, for Deanna and Stacy, to really take in the truth. I mean, I know that Stacy in the beginning, when she made her plea, said, look, if you can prove to me that Ronnie did it, then I'll accept that and I'll move on. And I think that you guys really laid out the case for why he was involved in this, and I don't think she was really ready to hear it.
I don't think if we had it on videotape and showed it to her, she would even be ready to hear it or accept it then. You know, it, we have these, we have family members that are just, you know, that sometimes they're just not, they don't, they're not going to believe it. They're going to believe in their loved one. Whereas his mother, she was way more open than the sister was, but I just don't think that she was ready to accept anything that we said, unless we were saying Ronnie is innocent.
I felt like that's what they were hoping for. And I think the smoking gun was right in front of them. And for me personally, the smoking gun was Russell Davis, the individual, the main witness who testified against him. And obviously when I first even read this case and we first took it on immediately as a defense attorney, my eyes got big when I heard 7 years later, another witness comes forward to say he was a part of it and this is what happened. 7 years later, this is fishy. I don't like it. So what do? You know, as the attorney, I look into, okay, what crimes was this person facing? Did they have an incentive to lie? How much were police harassing this person? You know, is there any way that this person 7 years later is coming back to say these things and it actually be truthful? Because it's just time, that much time, it just doesn't smell right. But after we dove into this case, and I learned a lot more about Russell, I think he was the smoking gun, and I don't know if his family's ever going to come to terms with it, but he's subpoenaed basically to the grand jury. And at that time he gets an attorney and he tells his whole story, and it's 7 years later, he's telling his whole story. And so why is he telling his story? Well, the interesting thing was that he was facing no more crimes. He went into rehab. He had cleaned his life up, and he got this subpoena 7 years later and decides to come forward with it because he's remarried. He's got a kid. And he says, I figured if I was going to go to jail, I had to go to jail now while my daughter was still little. That way I would get out and, you know, she would know who I was and she wouldn't be bitter and angry with me. So, his wife testified at trial too, saying, look, I didn't know the person he was before, but he told me this happened and we decided we had to call an attorney and he had to tell the truth because he was ready to face whatever he had to face in order to finally tell the truth about what he helped do, which was get rid of that body.
But he got no deal.
He testified at the grand jury first, not knowing what he would face, literally implicated himself in this crime, wow, accessory after the fact. And then it's not until later, before the actual trial, that he takes a plea agreement. And the plea agreement is 8 years, it's suspended. So he, you know, had probation, he got lucky. But when he testified at the grand jury and said what he helped do, he did not have a deal. And he had no other crimes. So really, why would this person come forward and implicate themselves if they really didn't have anything they were facing? Mm-hmm. So that's what, you know, I'd hope the family would truly understand is, you know, he knew details and information that a lot of other people corroborated. Russell says, well, he told me, you know, that he shot her and he was holding her in his arms and she said, I still love you. And, you know, he said he felt like she forgave him. And then he rolled her up in the rug and put her in the big trunk case that she had, that she actually had when she was married to the other guy.
See, it's those little details that make people way more believable. Those small little details. Oh, he rolled her up in the rug. The rug's missing. Oh, he put her in the trunk. Mm-hmm. The trunk's missing. Those are the things that make people much more believable.
Yeah, and I think that the other thing that it seemed to weigh heavily for you guys in your deliberations was the call to the sister-in-law, because that really put her right at the scene, put mm-hmm. her right at Ronnie Denny's house. So any theories about something happening in Shannon Long's house with the blood in the bedroom, that kind of went away when we are able to put her at Ronnie Denny's house at 8 a.m.
Exactly.
That's the thing that put it to bed for me.
All right. Well, joining us right now, Kristen Fatima, is really, I thought, a big part, really the heart of this investigation. Melissa's husband at the time that she went missing, Kevin. Thanks for joining us, Kevin.
Hey, no problem.
So Kevin, I just really wanted to find out, like, it's probably been about 8 months. Speaking to Fatima, and I know some of this was very painful and reliving these memories. I mean, did you walk away from it feeling like you got some stuff off your chest?
I was an emotional mess for about 2 or 3 days afterwards. But after that, yeah, it's just, it's soothing, you know, to let, because nobody had ever asked me how I felt, period. And that's the saddest part about it was, and I just felt that she needed to be expressed in the best way possible because she's the mother of my children and they deserve the best. And so that's all it was really about. And, you know, like I said, I sat through some of the trial and I thought, man, it's just a mess. It's like, it was a waste of time. I just couldn't believe it. You know, a long overdue trial that it was just, wow. And it was just sad, you know? And, you know, if it would have been easier if it was in the old times when they would just hang it, you know, and back in the old days, he did it. We all knew he did it and it was done. But, and, you know, the hardest part is still not knowing where our body's at and being able to have rest for the boys and a place for them to actually have a place to mourn to if they want to, or something like that. It's hard to raise kids knowing that something bad happened to their mom and they're never see her again. And there's nothing that can be done about it.
Hey Kevin, it's Fatima here.
Yeah.
Hi. No, I just, I personally wanted to thank you again because, you know, I can't even imagine how emotionally tolling it is to have to bring this all up again and have that conversation. You are so raw and open with us. So, you know, we really appreciate that because it gave us, you know, a little more about Melissa.
This is Chris. We didn't get to meet during the recording, but it's good to talk to you now. I feel like I know you because I sat through and watched the interview, and it was very, just like Fatima said, it was very raw. I think in a lot of times, in a lot of these cases, we don't get to hear that type of emotion or have somebody that can speak for the actual victim in this case. So I think it was great for you to come on, and we appreciate you for doing that.
Well, you know, that's just, you know, it's an emotional subject for me, and I'm going to, you know, I won't let anybody ever disrespect my boy's mother, you know, and she was just a good person. And it was just a tragedy what happened. And,
Kevin, as you saw when Chris and Fatima tried to tell the family that this is a fight that they probably shouldn't be waging and that justice really probably was served in this case, you know, the family really wasn't ready to hear it. Do you have any hope that at some point, Deanna, Stacy, Ronnie will accept what happened and move on?
That is up to Ronnie. That isn't up to me. I used to hate Ronnie's guts for what he did. And now after years and years and years and years and watching my kids grow up, and they'll never get that. And I feel sorry for him. That I wish he would have confessed to what he did. And then it could have been dealt with reasonably. If he would have just told the truth for what it was and everything, it would have been a different story. You would have never contacted me if he would have told the truth, period. But he chose that path, and he did what he did, and he chose to cover up what he did, and he's going to pay for it. But as far as wishing ill, I don't. I feel sorry for him, and I hope the best for his family because it's hard to deal with something like that, you know. But Ronnie has to bring himself to his terms with his own parents. Be like, hey, I'm sorry. I'm an idiot. I was a fool. I was a child. I was just dumb. I was on drugs. There had to be some excuse. The devil was in. There was some stupid excuse why he did what he did. A lot goes on out here in Western Oklahoma that just flies by, you know. The sad part is Melissa's not the only case where bad things have happened over stupid reasons, drugs or whatever, and it just kind of gets swept under the rug. I have a good friend of mine who, his mother was murdered, and it was 18 years later. The guy confessed, yeah, I did this, and that's the worst yet. You know, and that's the best hope that I can have in this situation when I think about it. But I try not to think about what could or shouldn't happen in this case.
Well, and, hopefully one day he does come forward. If he has that information to give, then hopefully he comes forward with it.
Kevin, I really want to thank you for not only sharing your story during the investigation, but calling us now and giving us a little bit of an update. So our thoughts are with you, and thank you. Hopefully you and a lot of the players in this case would, at some point, something will happen where you guys can have some closure and some peace.
Wow. Yeah. That's a large statement right there, but we'll figure it out, won't we?
Yeah. All right.
But thank you guys for allowing the story to be told.
Thanks, you, Kevin.
Kevin. Absolutely.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
All right, Kevin.
Bye.
If you're getting this podcast today, on Tuesday, the day it comes out, please make sure to watch a new episode tonight at 10 o'clock on Investigation Discovery. And it's a really sad and complicated case. It is a woman who died when a bomb exploded in her front door. And the convict was her ex-boyfriend, but seemed to have a rock-solid alibi. It's a really complicated, interesting, but tragic case. So please check that out. And next week on the podcast, we will discuss that. My name is Rob Rosen. I'm the executive producer and creator of Reasonable Doubt.
And my name is Detective Chris Anderson. I'm a retired homicide investigator and the co-host of Reasonable Doubt.
And I'm Fatima Silva, criminal defense attorney and co-host of Reasonable Doubt.
All right, that does it for us this week. Everybody, stay safe, stay home. We'll see you next Tuesday.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.